You are listening to the Virginia Voice, the broadcast of the reading of the Richmond Times-Dispatch on the Virginia Voice is made possible due to the generous support of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sunday, April 27th, Richmond Times-Dispatch. I'm Dennis Waldron for the Virginia Voice. We'll have about 25 minutes of local news, followed by about 25 minutes of news from the nation and world. After that, a half hour of editorials, columnists, and letters to the editor from the opinions pages, as well as other news as time allows. Our final half hour will begin with the obituaries and then whatever else we have time for. But before all that, the three-day Richmond area forecast. For today, Sunday, sunny, nice, less humid, high will be 73, and the overnight low tonight will be 46. On Monday, mostly sunny and nice, high of 76, with the overnight low 50 degrees. And on Tuesday, breezy and very warm, the high will be all the way up to 87 degrees, with an overnight low at 65 degrees. Your Virginia Voice readers for today are Glenn Wilkinson and Tori Tindall.
Thank you, Dennis. Our first article from the front page today is on the subject of housing costs in the Richmond area, and it is titled, Prices Remain on Rise, Supply Not Likely to Meet Demand Soon, by Eric Kalinich of the Times-Dispatch. Perhaps the greatest change to life in the Richmond region since the pandemic is the increased cost of buying a home. The median price of a single-family home has shot up 89% from about $220,000 in 2015 to almost $415,000 in the first quarter of this year. Now experts have bad news for prospective home buyers. Prices are not likely to decline this year. Laura Lafayette, CEO of the Richmond Association of Realtors, said she can envision the median price rising an additional 5% to 7% this year. It's still very much a seller's market, Lafayette said. That's the bottom line. Chad Joyce, owner of a local real estate firm and president of the Home Building Association of Richmond, agreed that prices could continue increasing, which is not really what anybody wants to hear, he said. Why are prices still high? New residents are moving to the area, but home builders are unable to construct enough houses, condos, and apartments to keep up with them. Plus, with steep interest rates, homeowners are more likely to stay put than to buy a new home that better fits their needs. The cost to borrow likely will stay above 6% until the end of 2026, said Jim Tobin, CEO of the National Association of Home Builders. Last week, the average fixed rate on a 30-year mortgage was 6.8%. As a result, supply remains low. In the first quarter of 2025, there was about 1 month's supply of homes for sale, far less than the 4 or 5 months needed to indicate a balanced market. When prices go up, homeowners pay more in real estate taxes, which are tied to the value of their homes. Young adults are often priced out of buying. As the cost to purchase goes up, so does the challenge of renting an apartment. New residents are forced to look outside the city and sometimes outside the beltway of Interstate 295 and Route 288. There's plenty of demand for houses in Greater Richmond, which experts describe as a good problem to have. According to the Weldon Cooper Center at the University of Virginia, Greater Richmond grew from 1.24 million people in 2020 to 1.3 million in 2024. But there aren't enough new homes coming out of the ground. We still don't have enough lots to meet the demand, Joyce said. I don't see supply meeting demand for at least the next 2 to 3 years. In pockets, Richmond is building new homes. Look at Scott's Addition in Manchester, and it appears there's a flurry of home building. But those neighborhoods mask reality. Zoom out, and home builders here are not constructing as many homes as they did when the pandemic started. In early 2020, there were about 240 active projects to build new neighborhoods, townhouses, condos, or apartment buildings in Greater Richmond. By the middle of 2022, that number slipped to about 160, where it remains. The only way to solve the housing crisis is to build more, Tobin said. We have to build our way out of it. The cost of building a new home is pushed upward by a limited number of laborers available, tariffs driving up the cost of supplies, and the slow process of gaining approval from local governments. The biggest problem with building new homes is finding people to do the manual labor, Tobin said. Nationwide, the home building industry needs 200,000 more workers. About one in three masons, carpenters, roofers, and painters needed to build a home comes from another country. If President Donald Trump deports millions of undocumented immigrants, as he has promised, prices could increase further. Who's going to build the houses in this country that we so desperately need? Tobin said. Then there's the challenge of tariffs. Tobin expects tariffs to increase the cost of a new home by about $10,000, even though a small percentage of home building material comes from other countries. About one in five pieces of lumber used in a new house or multifamily building comes from Canada. American buyers currently pay a tariff of about 15% on Canadian lumber, but that figure is expected to rise to roughly 35% this fall. Finally, there's the sometimes Herculean task of gaining approval by the county's Board of Supervisors or City Council. It takes 3 to 4 years to complete the permitting process, Joyce said. I still think it's incredibly slow, he added. Sometimes getting a housing community built means winning over elected officials, in spite of residents opposed to the project. When Goochland County leaders in 2023 suggested increasing the density of homes in the area just west of Short Pump, called Centerville, dozens of residents showed up to county meetings to voice their opposition. Ultimately, the board voted to reject the plan. When Henrico County's Board of Supervisors considered two of the largest planned neighborhoods in Verina in a decade, residents objected, aiming to preserve their rural landscape just a few miles east of downtown Richmond. Their rallying cry was, "Don't Short Pump Verina." The county approved the projects. The people who oppose development projects are often called NIMBYs, meaning not in my backyard. These residents often get a lot of attention from elected officials, Tobin said. So builders are trying to accelerate the movement of YIMBYs, meaning yes in my backyard. The Home Building Association of Richmond posted a job opening for a campaign manager to whip up volunteer support at planning commission and board meetings. We need to show up in force, Tobin said. YIMBY Action, a national organization that advocates for residential development projects, started a Richmond chapter in 2023. When a developer proposed building a 350-unit affordable housing complex on undeveloped land zoned for industrial uses in the city's north side, the chapter mobilized more than 20 local residents to write letters of support. Though the city's planning staff disfavored the project, city council gave it the green light. The residents who attend public meetings and oppose development projects tend to be white, affluent, and educated, Gelbach said. While they aim to protect their property values, they end up reducing the supply of housing and increasing costs on everyone else. Opponents of projects often claim new developments impact schools, traffic, or a neighborhood's character. But Gelbach countered that those things can be mitigated, and it's the job of local governments to figure out how. We need these homes because 55,000 people have moved here since 2020, and we have not built 55,000 new homes, Gelbach said. There's low supply and high demand. That's Econ 101. And again, that article from today's front page was, "Prices Remain on Rise, Supply Not Likely to Meet Demand Soon," by Eric Kalenich of the Times-Dispatch. Tori?
Thank you, Glenn. Our next article from today's front page is on Elections 2025. And this article is titled, "Will Fuhrer Give GOP Do-Over with Northern Virginia?" Current slate offers no statewide nominee from vote-rich region. This is by Michael Martz of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Fairfax County Supervisor Pat Herity knows that his decision to drop out of the Republican primary for lieutenant governor won't help his party in elections this year in Northern Virginia. a region deep in voters and economic challenges under President Donald Trump. Harrity, a five-term supervisor whose father, Jack Harrity, once dominated Fairfax and regional politics, withdrew from the race on Monday because of the lingering effects of heart surgery. "It was a tough decision," he said. "Tough decision that," he said, "was made more difficult by some conservative Republicans' concerns about the alternative. John Reed, a longtime Richmond radio host who is openly gay with a longtime male partner." Those concerns boiled over on Friday when Governor Glenn Youngkin publicly asked Reed to withdraw his candidacy 4 days after clinching the nomination because of sexually explicit photographs of other men that the governor alleged were linked to the candidate's personal online accounts. Reed denied that he reposted the photos and refused to step down, saying he was the target of a fabricated internet lie. Amid the uproar, GOP officials canceled Wednesday evening's scheduled debut rally in Glen Allen that was to have featured all three members of the Republican ticket, with Youngkin as a special guest. On Saturday, Reed posted on social media that he was back on the campaign trail. "Waiting for the next crazy personal attack, but I'm moving on to meet and listen to voters and to talk about how to make Virginia successful for all of us in the coming years. Lots of stops on the trail today." On Friday night, Northern Virginia's Loudoun County Republican Committee backed Reed, posting on X, "We support John Reed. He is the right man for the job and has been staunchly conservative for decades." It added, "We're frustrated by these attacks on his character." Northern Virginia political analyst Mark Rizel said the furor could give Republicans a chance to address a potentially greater threat to their chances in statewide races in November, the danger that Trump's policies pose to the economy in Northern Virginia. If Reed were to withdraw, there is an opportunity, perhaps, to find someone from Northern Virginia who is lacking on the ticket, Rizel said. "It's hard to ignore such a vote-rich area that is going through a lot of uncertainty about the effects of the Trump administration's policies." The election is going to be, to some degree, about Trump, whether Republicans want that or not, he said. And they have a problem in Northern Virginia. Chris Saxman, a former Republican delegate who leads the Virginia Free Business Organization, questioned in today's environment that you're going to do that much better by having a candidate from a certain region, especially with what's going on with the federal government. Besides, Saxman said, Reed says he's not dropping out. They certainly can't force him off the ticket, he said. Harrity, in an interview 2 days after he withdrew from the lieutenant governor's race, acknowledged that Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears, the Republican gubernatorial candidate, faces political headwinds in Northern Virginia because of Trump's cuts to the federal workforce and spending in a regional economy that depends on both. "The actions of the Trump administration are going to make it very difficult for Winsome Earl Sears to do well in Northern Virginia," he said. "That doesn't mean she won't do well. It's getting people to understand that this is about Virginia. It's not about the Trump administration." At the same time, Harrity said, "I'm not going to sit here and say Trump is not going to be a complication in the race, because he certainly is. Anybody who tells you otherwise is not being honest." Harrity's departure had appeared to set the Republican statewide ticket with Earl Sears for governor, Reed for lieutenant governor, and Attorney General Jason Meares seeking re-election. As it stands, the GOP ticket has no representative from Northern Virginia, the Washington suburbs that traditionally power the economic engine of the state and provide a major source of political campaign fundraising. In statewide contests, Democrats traditionally run up large margins in Northern Virginia. Youngkin, who lives in Fairfax and led a Republican sweep in 2021, has said the GOP's winning formula is to trim Democratic margins in Northern Virginia while driving up the GOP's vote in rural strongholds. In 2017, Democrat Ralph Northam carried the five largest Northern Virginia localities, Fairfax, Prince William, Loudoun and Arlington counties, and the city of Alexandria, by a total of 272,000 votes. 4 years later, Youngkin cut Democrats' margin in those localities by 15,600 votes, while winning by 64,000 statewide. Republicans need somebody to speak to Northern Virginia, and this ticket doesn't really have that, said Steve Farnsworth, director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington in Fredericksburg. Youngkin's effort to push Reid off the ticket could give Republicans a do-over with a candidate from Northern Virginia, but only if it works, Farnsworth said. The way it is the way it's going to be, unless Reid says otherwise, Farnsworth said. This controversy is the last thing the Republican Party of Virginia needs right now, he added. The party is already facing substantial political headwinds. The Democrats will pick their nominees for Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General in a June 17 primary. But the Democrats' nominee for governor, former Representative Abigail Spanberger, Democrat 7th, represented a swath of Northern Virginia along the Interstate 95 corridor from eastern Prince William County through the Fredericksburg area to Caroline County in the last of her three terms in Congress. Her term in Congress absolutely gives her meaningful background in and at least part of Northern Virginia, said Marty Noe, a former 16-year Prince William supervisor, elected as a Republican, and businessman who now chairs the County Chamber of Commerce. The chamber has not endorsed any candidates in the November statewide elections, but Noe said people in the region are focused squarely on the economic fallout from cuts to the federal workforce and private contracts by Trump's Department of Government Efficiency, which billionaire businessman Elon Musk has led. It's a dumpster fire, Noe said, during a forum that the Prince William Committee of 100 held on the effect of DOGE cuts in the first 2 months of the Trump administration. This is bad. Noe was less blunt in a recent interview, but he was no less alarmed about the damage to Northern Virginia and its business community. Many people in Northern Virginia are suddenly out of a job or nervous that they're about to be out of a job, and that creates a lot of concern, he said. As the owner of an appliance store, Noe also is sensitive to the potential effects of tariffs that Trump has imposed on goods imported from many of the United States trading partners, including parts necessary for the products he sells, at a time when customers are not walking through the doors. It's a really problematic mix for a lot of Northern Virginia businesses, he said. We're going to be looking for candidates, both at the regional and state level, who want Virginia to find a way to stay strong despite these challenges. Noe considers Harrity a friend, as he also does Prince William School Board Chairman Baber Lateef, who is seeking the Democratic nomination for Lieutenant Governor in a six-way primary on June 17th. There's no question that Pat would have been a very strong ally of our region at a time when we need allies. Republicans are counting on Youngkin, a former business executive from Fairfax who can't run for a second term, but is backing Earl Sears as the next best thing. Both have fully embraced Trump, his cuts to the federal workforce, and his tariffs, while trying to reassure Virginia voters that private industry is willing to help dislocated federal workers find jobs and buffer the state's imperiled economy. I think the ticket is going to continue Governor Youngkin's legacy, Harrity said on Wednesday. That's a record of economic growth and opportunity. Former Representative Tom Davis, Republican 11th, agrees. If you run on Youngkin, you'll be fine. But Davis, who represented parts of Fairfax and Prince William counties in Congress from 1995 to 2008, also is realistic about the political challenges that Republicans face, particularly in Northern Virginia. The national atmosphere up here doesn't play well for Republicans, he said in an interview. Noe, who lost to a more conservative Republican in the party primary for board chairman in 2019, said Youngkin is right to encourage businesses to hire displaced federal workers, but suggested publicly that the governor has not done enough to push back on Trump's policies that hurt the regional economy. Virginia may have more than 200,000 open jobs, but he said relatively few will match the skill set of longtime federal employees suddenly looking for work. A lot more than encouragement, we need solutions, he said. The region's business community is torn between its concern over the damage that Trump is inflicting and the potential for a Democratic governor to allow changes in state law that they would not like and that Youngkin has repeatedly blocked. That includes a potential repeal of Virginia's right-to-work law. The law, dating to 1947 under then-Governor Bill Tuck, forbids requiring employees in union-organized workplaces to join the union or pay dues. The law does not directly affect non-union workplaces, but it has become a cherished principle of Virginia's business community. The Democratic-controlled General Assembly has repeatedly passed legislation to repeal the law, but Youngkin has vetoed it each time. Last week, all six Democrats running for lieutenant governor said they support repealing the law. Earl Sears emphasizes the issue in her campaign, while Spanberger has not said how she would respond to a proposed repeal of the law if elected governor. I guess she'll cross that bridge when she gets to it, said Delegate Mark Sickles, Democrat Fairfax, an ally who serves as vice chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. Davis, the former congressman, said protecting the right-to-work law may be the best weapon Republicans have against Spanberger. But for that, she'd be a prohibitive favorite, he said. Farnsworth at the University of Mary Washington said, there's no doubt if Democrats have a good year in Virginia, then there'll be more pressure on ending right to work than ever before. Harrity also said Republicans have a sleeper issue in energy because of rising electricity demand driven largely by the proliferation of data centers in Northern Virginia and increasingly across the state, and the potential cost of policies General Assembly Democrats advanced to move from fossil fuels to renewable forms of energy to generate power. It's going to drive up the cost of electricity and drive down reliability, he predicted. But the issue at the front of voters' minds in Northern Virginia is the danger that even Republicans say Trump's policies pose to the region's economy. If this becomes a referendum on the Trump administration at this point in the term, it's not good because of the Northern Virginia factor, Davis said. Sickles, a Democrat representing a House district near Harrity's Board of Supervisors district in Fairfax, said, I think Northern Virginia voters are going to vote for sanity over chaos. Al Alborn, an independent news columnist in Prince William, said the Committee of 100 Forum on the Domino Effects of DOGE showed how dominant the issue has become for business leaders in the county. I'd say DOGE is the issue up here, Alborn said. I'm predicting something of a blue wave in the elections in November. All 100 seats in the House of Delegates are up for election in November. Democrats currently hold a 51-49 edge in the chamber. 8 years ago, in the first year of Trump's first presidential term, Democrats came within a drawing in which a Republican won a contest that had ended in a tie of eliminating a 16-seat edge that Republicans held in the House. Democrats also swept all three statewide offices, with then-Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam winning for governor by about 9 percentage points. Farnsworth at the University of Mary Washington said the Republican ticket appears designed to connect more with voters in the party's conservative base, now defined by Trump's Make America Great Again populist movement, than people facing the economic consequences of the president's policies. The question that voters are going to be looking at is about current conditions, he said. If people have lost their jobs or lost their customers or think they may, they won't thank Republicans for Donald Trump's policies. Reassuring those Northern Virginia voters may be the biggest challenge that Earl Sears and her Republican running mates face. Republicans tend not to win in Northern Virginia, but keeping Northern Virginia close is key to Republican success in statewide elections, as Glenn Youngkin demonstrated effectively 4 years ago, Farnsworth said. But, he added, if the Republican Party gets blown out in Northern Virginia, it's all over statewide. And that concludes this second front page article titled, Will Fuhrer Give GOP Do-Over Within Northern Virginia? Current slate offers no statewide nominee from vote-rich region. And this article is by Michael Martz of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.